Welcome. My name is Vicki Griffin, and I'm the Director of Lifestyle Matters. And today, we are talking about hearts on fire, taming the fires of heart disease, metabolic syndrome, and diabetes. My special guest today is Dr. John Kelly. I am thrilled to have him with us here today. He is a board-certified preventive medicine specialist. Dr. Kelly, welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. It's good to be with you.
Please tell our guests a little bit more about yourself, why you do what you do, and what your training and work is today.
Yeah, so I actually am a lifestyle medicine specialist. I'm board certified also by the American Board of Lifestyle Medicine as a specialist. And that means what I do is I use lifestyle change to treat and reverse disease. Specifically, most of my work is in diabetes. I also train physicians. I am the co-author for the board review course in lifestyle medicine, and I do training of physicians in lifestyle medicine. So today's topic is actually very much on the point of lifestyle and disease.
I have witnessed your work with patients when you've been running some of these lifestyle programs, and it's been astonishing to me how much difference small choices can change the trajectory of a life, their medication profile, their general health, depression levels, everything. Dr. Kelly, how widespread is heart disease in the United States?
Well, you know, we talk about cause of death and we think of what's called proximal and distal. And these are technical terms, but basically the thing that kills most people is heart disease. The heart stops beating. But in reality, when we look at what's called the ultimate causes of death, we find that poor diet and inactivity are the two leading causes. And today, actually, we're going to be talking about both kinds of causes. So heart disease is the leading cause of death, cancer is second.
Wow. And so talk to us a little bit about the progression of heart disease. Can it actually begin in childhood?
It's amazing, but pathologists have done studies on the vessels of infants and found fatty streaks already present in the walls of vessels of even infants. Certainly by beginning middle school, the average American child has identifiable heart disease in their vessels.
So we know that there are genetic and environmental factors that contribute to some of these conditions and that nothing can be wiped out in this sinful world 100%. But this is a pandemic of lifestyle
absolutely.
That is contributing to this. And so it's really serious. What are some of the indicators or symptoms involved in heart disease progression?
Well, of course, the biggest problem with what we call heart disease is really not the heart. It is the vessels that are supplying the blood to the heart. So it's the coronary arteries that are having trouble. And the heart muscle itself, until it starts to be deprived of oxygen, is quite good and quite healthy. I've pointed out to some people that you might have a person die in an accident, a physical accident, and they've allowed their organs to be donated, and we would take that heart and put it into someone else, and it would work just fine. However, if that person, instead of having the physical accident, having a car wreck or whatever that killed them, if they would have been living and had a toxic lifestyle, that same heart would have perhaps had a heart attack and they would have died from a heart attack. So the point is, what we call heart disease is really coronary artery disease. It's where the walls of the arteries get sores, if you will. Mm-hmm. You can think of it as a sore, and they swell up. And they clog the artery so that it cannot have the proper blood flow to the heart muscle, which can be deadly. The other thing that happens is these sores we've found, they're called plaques, they are capable of causing a blood clot to form and block the artery. And so this is the danger in heart disease, is a lack of blood flow to the heart muscle.
Talk about the process of inflammation as it relates to the progression of this disease. And I know that you're talking about atherosclerosis. There's also arteriosclerosis, and diet plays a part in that. And when we think about damage to these vessels, it's not just to the heart. It's to the eyes and to the groin to the periphery. And so it affects every aspect of well-being and life when we're suffering from these chronic ailments.
Well, one of the things that happens is anytime we have a sore or an injury to tissue, the body's response includes an inflammatory response. In other words, as the normal immune system function takes place to repair, there's heat produced. And this is from the cytokines and other things that go on. Actually, you think about what we know about chemistry, it makes good sense, because if you want to do some repair, you want to have chemical reactions taking place, and chemical reactions happen faster the higher the temperature. So it makes sense that the body raises the temperature. Well, this inflammatory condition, if it's short-term and acute, is not a problem. But what we're talking about is long-term, ongoing, low-level inflammation, and that is very destructive to the body. And we've used the term pro-inflammatory. We'll talk more about how lifestyle can be pro-inflammatory or anti-inflammatory, and we're going to talk about that.
So chronic inflammation occurs then when your immune system is actually responding to environmental factors or unnatural conditions within the body. And that's where we have some choices to make.
Absolutely. It turns out that those unnatural conditions are largely under our control.
So what I hear you saying is that every stage of this atherosclerotic progression might be considered an inflammatory response to injury, and that plays into this.
That's correct. So in other words, as the injuries occur to the blood vessel walls or to other organs, this causes an inflammation process.
When we talk about blood vessel disease, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity, these are all metabolic conditions that are prevalent in our society, especially in Western cultures. What are the connecting factors that make these cousins, if you will?
Yeah, well, they all seem to be related to, I would say, two key things. We've already mentioned inflammation, an inflammatory process, but another one is insulin resistance. And science is still sorting out exactly whether it's the inflammation that causes the insulin resistance, or is it the insulin resistance that's causing inflammation. It seems that they feed on each other and they exacerbate one another. But so we have inflammation and insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is ultimately the underlying cause of type 2 diabetes, which is the most common form of diabetes. And there may be more people in the world with prediabetes than with diabetes. And so there is something called metabolic syndrome, which is a constellation of five dysfunctions in the body that really are resulting from inflammation and insulin resistance. And that's, I would say, the key links that ties all these pieces together.
Well, that's really interesting. And talking about insulin resistance, insulin is a very, very important hormone produced by the pancreas, which actually ushers or unlocks the cell to get glucose, which is the fuel of the cell, into the cell. And a person that is insulin resistant, who is pre-diabetic, they're making plenty of insulin, but the insulin is not effective. And there's a reason for that. Two of the cardinal reasons would be inactivity and overfeeding, overeating, and the muscle becomes striated or fatty. And so the fatty striation of those muscles is impairing the ability of the insulin to get the glucose into the cell. So interestingly enough, one of the first symptoms of insulin resistance is fatigue.
Yes, absolutely. Talking about these streaks and so on, what's going on here is this is the storage of excess calories that are not being consumed or burned or used. And so when I consume more calories chronically than I consume or burn, my body will store these calories because it conserves, the body does not waste calories, it conserves all energy. And it will initially store that in the, what we might call our love handles, anyway, the adipose tissue we have. But after a while, it exceeds the capacity of my adipose tissue and it starts to put it in my liver and put it in my pancreas, put it in muscle tissue. And this is where the lipotoxicity, it's called. This is the toxicity to the cell coming from the storage of calories in the form of fats that are not really intended to be there. So this connection then goes to every organ. it can affect every organ, as you said, the eyes, the hearing, the fine circulation, etc.
Yeah, this is from the journal Circulation. We now know that the connection between obesity, fatty arteries, and vulnerable heart are more complicated, and that inflammation plays a major part in disease progressions. And so that would pertain to obesity, metabolic disease, and all of the dysregulation that begins to occur with these appetite signals. You know, if this were the only topic and if this were the only part of this that we could discuss, this would be really depressing. Is there any hope?
Well, we're talking right now, of course, about the problem, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the solution for sure. But it is so true. Obesity is the byproduct of the dysfunction, the lifestyle dysfunction. In other words, I'm constantly, always telling my patients, don't focus on your weight. Focus on your lifestyle. Mm. Weight is a symptom, not a cause. And so, but it is very important. It is very true that obesity is associated with all of these chronic diseases.
And there is something called normal weight obesity. One study showed that 40% of normal weight college students have what is called normal weight obesity, which is a low ratio of lean muscle to body fat. So more body fat, less lean muscle, junk diet, inactivity. So even though these individuals are not overtly overweight, they're still at risk for 30 different chronic diseases.
Sure.
And so there's a fitness element here, that it's not just about the way we look, it's about the way that we live.
Yes, someone has talked about the difference between fitness and fatness and its effect on our risk factors. And it is true that fatness is more dangerous, whether you're overweight, as you're saying, or not. If my fitness is so poor that the majority of my weight is from adipose tissue, then I'm going to have the same kind of risk as if I was an overweight person.
And just think about the mental health effects, because there's a linear relationship with systemic inflammation and these problems and the effect on brain inflammation and brain function and cell survival. So it's one thing, the good news that our brains produce new nerve cells every day in substantial numbers, but their survivability is another thing. And survivability is difficult in the presence of chronic brain inflammation, chronic stress, and insulin resistance can occur in the brain so that the nutrients, the glucose, can't get into the cells.
Sure. And the fact that we have neurons is wonderful, but if they're not functioning properly, then our memory and our learning is impaired in our performance.
Yes. Dr. Kelly, tell us a little bit about the difference between subcutaneous fat and visceral fat.
Yes. These are two very, very different types of fat in the body. And subcutaneous is basically just below the dermis, just below the skin. And it adds cushioning and insulation. And females have a little bit more than us males. And that makes them nice and soft. But the visceral part of it, fat, is around the organs. This is fat that is underneath the subcutaneous fat. It's in a different part of the body. It's metabolically very different. It's active metabolically, mm-hmm. and it is pro-inflammatory. I remember the first time I saw it as a medical student, and the physician I was observing, the physician did abdominal surgery and carefully cut the tissue, and then we opened the perineum, it's called, and this is that sac sort of that encloses everything in the abdomen. And this person was an overweight person lying on the surgery table. When he put that scalpel through there, it oozed out like a thick gooey. It was actually the visceral fat around the organs was so much pressure that it just pushed itself out of there. When we finished in close the surgery, it was a task to push all of that tissue back in and suture it up. And so that tissue, visceral fat, adipose, is very harmful, we now know. Is a big part of the inflammatory process and the metabolic syndrome, the insulin resistance.
This is consistent with what you're sharing with us, Dr. Kelly, that local inflammation, this was surprising to me when I read it, that local inflammation within adipose tissue may be the sentinel event or a primary event that causes or is at least associated with systemic insulin resistance and systemic inflammation. two of the primary or cardinal features of metabolic syndrome. Wow, makes me want to go for a walk. So adipose tissue is not just a storage depot. It actually has properties that make it act like a hormone.
Yes, it is hormonally active. And the hormones that are produced from the adipose tissue actually make us eat more, mm-hmm. make us more hungry, mm-hmm. and it also increases our insulin resistance, our stress hormones, our inflammatory state.
Wow. Well, and it's just such good news that modest changes, modest shifts in diet can begin to reverse this process and begin to contribute to better mental and physical well-being. So you have shared with us about this intra-abdominal or visceral fat and the subcutaneous fat, and this is found throughout the body, isn't it? In other places as well, like around the heart?
Yes, around the heart, and actually it's from basically the abdomen is mm-hmm. where we would have visceral fat.
Okay.
But there's also intramuscular fat in our tissues, and if you do a CT image of the body, you can see the light color tissue is all this fat that's distributed around the lungs, around every organ, and people who are carrying this chronically too much weight.
Yeah, and so what begins as peripheral in skeletal muscle insulin resistance, then it becomes central. It affects the liver, it affects the organs, it affects libido and function.
The good news is that healthy lifestyle can reverse this. This is not a genetic thing, this is a lifestyle thing.
That really is good news indeed. And Brian Schwartz, who is the director of interventional cardiology at Kettering, he said this: the presence of obesity increases the risk for heart disease, whether you have metabolic syndrome or not. And I found that quite interesting. What do you make of that?
Well, it's so true, because the obesity is, then we have this adipose tissue that's producing, it's hormonally active, it's fueling inflammation, etc. And so absolutely, you don't have to have metabolic syndrome in order to have increased risk of heart disease and damage to your arteries.
I love the way that God does math, though. For every 5 extra pounds you lose, you take 15 pounds pressure off your knees. That's the kind of math I like.
Yeah, that's exciting.
So while we work on the plan of addition, the Lord really will work on the plan of multiplications. What are some other overweight complications that people face today?
It's interesting. The list is endless, but some of the more prominent ones is that has to do with the osteoarthritis and the pressure on the knees and the joints. Also has a lot to do with our lack of exercise causes low bone density. And so with that extra weight and low bone density, we have more vulnerable joints. You know, we have an awful lot of knee replacements going on in this country.
Well, that is true. There's a really interesting article published in Diabetes Care, and this I found fascinating because I read studies that we don't actually see ourselves in the size that we really are until we go to other countries where there's more normal weight. Individuals in the upper normal weight and slightly overweight BMI, body mass index range, have a relatively high prevalence and are at increased risk of having the metabolic syndrome.
Yes, and the metabolic syndrome, as we've been saying, is a precursor typically to diabetes, heart disease, and these inflammatory conditions.
So the question is there anything that we can do to dampen the fires of inflammation in our bodies? You know, Dr. Kelly, we are in a battleground, not a playground. And what my colleague Evelyn and I have ascertained is that we have 5 major battleground areas to fight. So we're fighting hard, the addicted brain, the unhealthy body. We're fighting hard, but we need to learn to fight smart. So there's, number one, there's your environment. That is what surrounds you. You can get an angioplasty and get some fries and a burger on the way out of the hospital. So your environment is what surrounds you, and it's your internal environment of how you think, and we've addressed that in a different program. There is your culture. That is what pressures you. It might be your ethnic culture, your family, school, work, your religious culture. So the culture is what pressures you. There's our Western culture that is always calling us in a direction. There's your biology. That's what changes you. And we've talked a little bit about that. We'll talk about it more, how what begins as a mood or an inclination soon develops into a condition. So there's your biology. That's what changes you. There's your brain, and that's what drives you. And what they say in the field of obesity is that the battle is not for the bulge. It's for the brain. It's not about weight control. It's about appetite control. And that's a brain thing. And finally, There is the Spirit, and that is who leads you. And so when we're talking about quenching the fires of inflammation, we need to pay attention to all five of these battleground areas. Have you seen that in your practice?
Oh, absolutely. And it's like I said earlier, I tell people who have been trying to control their weight, focus on a lifestyle, adopting a healthy lifestyle, and your weight will take care of itself.
Right. And doesn't that begin with the way we think? You know, a learner versus a fixed mindset, or an attitude of, I have an identity change here, that I don't just have a goal of becoming fit. I am now going to see myself as a person who lives in a fitness mindset. That is a big, big difference. So one of the first things we need to quench, we're talking about quenching these fires, is quenching inactivities. And there's a saying that those who think they have not time for bodily exercise will sooner or later have to find time for illness.
That's so true. Have you seen, I saw a little cartoon I thought was so great, and the doctor is talking to his patient, and the fellow is saying, I don't have time for exercise. And he says, do you have time to be dead? So we absolutely do need to be active. We were designed, we're built for action. Lack of activity, unless we're talking about, of course, if we've broken a bone or something,
right,
then it needs to be immobilized and rest.
Of course.
But in a normal person, we need daily activity. In fact, the numbers that we're hearing now is that a minimum for a healthy person would be 30 minutes. But if you are trying to fight off a chronic disease, you should be thinking of an hour a day, total time. Doesn't have to be all in 1 hour. Be shooting for an hour a day.
Absolutely. And it's very interesting that you would bring this up, because in the Bible, in the beginning, when God made man and woman, he linked nutrition and activity together. He said,
yes,
by the sweat of your brow, you will eat. So he linked what we eat and what we do together. And you go to the end of the Bible, to the prophecies of the end of time, and it talks in Ezekiel, the book of Ezekiel, about the sin of Sodom, fullness of bread and idleness. And so the exact opposite condition. And so this idleness and overeating contribute to a major bucket of woes. In fact, it's been said that more than 250,000 deaths a year in the United States alone are attributable just to lack of physical activity. So we need to make time. It's not, am I going to exercise today? It's when and where.
And what we are learning is that inactivity makes our metabolic condition worse, so that my poor diet has an even worse effect when I'm inactive.
Oh.
In other words, if I'm active and I eat a bad diet, it's harmful. But if I am inactive, that harm from that same diet is even worse. So it's a synergistic negative effect.
Yes.
The good news is that when I become active, it's synergistic to make my good diet even more beneficial to me.
And when it comes to exercising, we often will think of the things we can't do. You know, I have a hitch in my get along, or I have a challenge with this or that or the other. And if we've been unhealthy, or we've been in an accident, or we may be confined to a wheelchair, usually there is some form of movement, some sort of activity that can be done. My sister is a tremendous role model to me in this area. She's 8 years older than I am, and she's in beautiful condition. She did have double knee replacement. She had ski accidents that caused tremendous damage throughout the years, but she kept her weight. And even after her knee surgeries, she found floor exercises just to control anxiety. And so it was a real example to me not to avoid moving, because what I wish I could do, I can't do. Find something that you can do. In fact, inactivity has been stated to be an independent risk factor for elevated markers of inflammation in at-risk individuals.
Yes, it's interesting that regular activity is anti-inflammatory, whereas inactivity is pro-inflammatory.
So we've got to quench inactivity. And, you know, honestly, one of the first things that occurs with insulin resistance, the glucose is not getting into the cells. So one of the first symptoms is fatigue. So really, what we're talking about here is an act of the will to get up and get those tennis shoes on when you are fatigued, you're tired, you're stressed, the brain is tired, the body is fatigued, even though we have not been moving. We may have been Zooming all day long, But I never thought we'd see the day when we associate the name Zoom with sitting down. And so to schedule that time to get outside, and we think, well, I can't get 5,000, 6,000 steps in, so why bother? No, do something. Do something and do it multiple times a day.
Yes, this quenching our inflammatory diet, some of the things that are particularly inflammatory or pro-inflammatory would be fried foods, these highly processed carbohydrates and sweets. Meat, especially red meat, has been shown to be pro-inflammatory, and also high-fat dairy. Cheese, sorry to the cheese lovers, but that is a pro-inflammatory food, as is sugar and these calorie-laden
butter, sugar. Butter, eggs, croissants. There are some forms of croissants that are higher in cholesterol than a steak. So these concentrated, fiberless foods, too much added sugar. A 64-ounce soda pop has 135 grams of fructose. You would have to eat 33 peaches to get that much fructose in one sitting. A lowly peach has 4 grams, a banana has 7, and an apple has 9. So these calorie-laden drinks. And the interesting thing about these drinks, Dr. Kelly, these sugary drinks and even diet drinks for some reason also tend to increase the risk for diabetes. Even though they don't have calories, they still work with these peptides that signal hunger. So people who use diet drinks tend to eat more calories. But these sugary drinks actually turn on a peptide in the stomach called neuropeptide Y, which sends out a signal, I'm hungry. Then we eat the high-fat food with it. You were talking about these hormones produced in adipose tissue or in fatty tissue, leptin being one of them. And leptin, when we become leptin resistant from a high-fat diet, the leptin can't do its job, which is to tell you that you've had enough. So we're eating a meal and drinking a drink that says, I'm hungry, and then the signal to turn off is dialed down. So what we think is emotional eating is actually now become a condition. It has become a metabolic issue that needs to be addressed.
So true.
So I would say that there are 7 deadly dietary shifts that the Western diet has sort of precipitated, and we're going to get to what to do about this and how to incorporate change. You know, it's found in the produce department. So first of all, we have too much sodium in the diet. And interestingly enough, it's not from the salt shaker. It's from processed, packaged foods. Just because something doesn't taste salty does not mean it is not high in sodium because it's used as a preservative. So 75% of the sodium in the American diet is from packaged processed foods. So it's not just too much sodium that's the issue with blood vessel disease, it's too low of potassium. Again, there's a ratio. As we were talking about this before the program, Dr. Kelly, nutrition is a three-legged stool. It's wanting to take nutrients in the right ratios in their natural form, because when you do that, you are going to maximize the absorption of those nutrients. You are going to maximize their availability and their utility in the system. So that means that cellular activity is enhanced, energy is increased, and you're also going to want to retain those nutrients. You want to maximize their retention. And so high sodium, low potassium. Another of the dietary shift is a very high level of processed foods, but low fiber intake. What would be some fiber? Is a gristly piece of chicken a high fiber? I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, it seems tough, doesn't it? Or maybe one of those tough liver, if you've ever eaten liver.
No.
It's pretty chewy. But no, there's no fiber there because all of the material in animal foods is fully digestible except the bone. So we're talking here about plants. Plant foods are really the only source of fiber in our diet.
What a colorful array. So high animal protein, low vegetable protein, that's another area to pay attention. High processed sugary foods, but low fruit and vegetable intake. High saturated fat, you addressed that. We see that with the butters and the cheeses. I read one report that one of the highest sources of saturated fat in the American diet is pizza. And so saturated fat, low mono and omega-3 fatty acids, and we will progress to that in a few moments. High calorie dense foods, low nutrient rich plant foods, high caffeine, alcohol, and sweetened drink intake, low water intake.
Yes, these are the seven things that are deadly or harmful. We're going to need to talk about how we can replace them with things that are anti-inflammatory.
Exactly. And we really don't want to put this off until tomorrow. You know, tomorrow is the busiest day on the calendar. And it's been said that nothing is so fatiguing as the eternal hanging on of an uncompleted task. And the Lord Jesus cares about your health. He says that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit of God, and He wants you to prosper and be in good health. He wants to add value to your life, even if you're dealing with a situation or a chronic condition that you know is not going to be completely resolved. It will still add value to your ability to care for yourself, to think, to lower pain, and to reduce the risk of unnecessary suffering. And we need to quench just constantly being under stress. It creates inflammation.
That's so true. The stress is very harmful to our immune system, for example.
Yeah.
Chronic stress is very harmful to our health.
Right. So we also want to quench that attitude of defeat. You know, miracles come in cans. If you could go to the store and you could buy a miracle in a can, would you do it? Well, I sure would.
We can get a dozen of them.
Yeah. So the Bible says, I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. So we want to stay cool, calm, connected, and create steady habits that incorporate into our very DNA so that these things become a habit rather than a list. So creating a lifestyle, creating that environment, managing stress, and creating connections. So let's talk a little bit about the importance today of diet. And what about water intake, staying hydrated?
Well, you know, water is one of those foods that we take that has no calories. However, it is very much like fiber. It's an essential nutrient, it's essential food. We need to drink probably in the neighborhood of 8 or more glasses of water per day in a typical lifestyle. If you're spending a lot of time outdoors, you need to have even more than that. I like thinking about how knowing whether I'm drinking enough water literally is able to look at the color of our urine. When we are not hydrated adequately, it gets darker and yellow, and then it can actually be orange or dark orange. We want our urine to be clear. And here's another thing. It's next to impossible to drink too much water. You'd have to drink, it's estimated, somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 gallons of water. And so, yes, hydration is absolutely important. In fact, I spent a little time in my training as a physician in pain management. And one of the experts I worked with told me that you do not start medication for pain without making sure that your patient is getting hydrated and getting adequate sleep. Because to prescribe medication without taking care of those two things is irresponsible.
So I know that you're not recommending people drink 2 gallons of water a day. But it is very, very important to keep our blood moving freely, to deliver oxygen and nutrients to these far corners of the body and the brain. I know that when I am deficient in my water intake, I will start to develop neck and head pain. So I'm conscious of water intake. And I love what you tell your patients, Dr. Kelly. I've heard you advise them to begin their morning, to charge the system, to get ready for breakfast with a nice big glass of tepid water, room temperature water, or warm water, to wake up the system and to prepare them for the meal that is coming. What about drinking water between meals instead of hydrating with meals?
Well, the thing about drinking our water at mealtime is it delays our digestion, and it is certainly we have to absorb the water before we can digest. So we recommend that it's better for our metabolism and our digestion if we drink our water between meals, say a couple of hours after or an hour before mealtime. I will say this, I do tell people, if you're dehydrated, drink water. I don't care if it's mealtime or not.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I think that's great advice. And I've had the privilege of working with you and observing you in action with these patients who, these are all new concepts. And so they have to be worked in one thing at a time. And as we get to the issue of diet, really, there is no one food that's a magic bullet for heart health. There's no one thing. Nature has an amazing array of plant foods that are going to work together to build brain and body health and help you to achieve your optimal health. So many studies have actually shown that vegetarians seem to have a lower risk of obesity, coronary heart disease, high blood pressure, and diabetes mellitus, and some forms of cancer. So, Dr. Kelly, you have adopted a vegetarian lifestyle. You advise that for your patients. And tell me what some of the results that you see as you work with people that are struggling with some of these syndromes.
Well, what we know is that the plant foods are the ones that have the phytonutrients and the essential things that we need for health. And the other thing is that the calorie density of plant foods mm-hmm. is lower than animal mm-hmm. foods. And so there's more bulk. It's the fiber in our diet and the amount of volume that we eat that tells our apostat that we've had enough. And so, yes, study after study is showing that vegetarians, vegans tend to have lower BMI, less of these kind of diseases, less obesity. And in fact, yes, I adopted a vegetarian lifestyle years ago. Actually, you know why I adopted and what caused me to become a vegetarian? It was reading Genesis chapter 1. I wasn't even a Christian yet, but I had come to the conclusion that there was a creator, and I began reading the Bible to understand his design. And lo and behold, it was really clear to me in the first chapter that God created plants for Adam and Eve to eat. I have been a vegetarian ever since that, and it's really served me well. My weight is about what it was, within 2 pounds of what it was when I graduated high school. But I don't work at that.
Right,
I don't even think about my weight. I eat a healthy diet and try to live a healthy lifestyle, and weight takes care of itself.
So I love the plant food program, Dr. Kelly, because as a person who was always starving myself, always trying to lose weight, developing bulimia at a very young age for 20 years from age 11 to age 31, 20 years of just complete trauma and hunger and never feeling satisfied and not being able to eat and yet not being able to do well with weight control, because it actually creates more hunger when we starve ourselves in that way.
Yes.
And so when I discovered not only the power of God to change my heart, my mind, and give me value in life, and to heal all of that from my background, but I then knew that he had a plan and that he wanted me to be satisfied, that the devil just wants us to be hungry all the time, hungry for love, hungry for companionship, hungry for stability, hungry for food, hungry for satisfaction or safety. But God says, I will satisfy those needs. And he provides a lifestyle that builds consistency, security, and stability in our habits, as well as our character. Our character and our conduct are healing. And a plant-based diet is a healing diet. And I don't have cravings anymore. I don't think about food anymore between meals. It's just not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so grateful that a well-planned plant-based diet is going to provide the right nutrients and the right calories in the right ratios in the right amounts. And I don't have to panic. I don't have to starve. I can enjoy beauty, color, and variety. And you know, there's a Bible verse, Psalm 103, it says, open your mouth and I will fill it with good things. And I understand that that is a primary reference to the salvational delights that God gives his children, but he's comparing it to a good meal.
Sure.
And he
sure
says, I'm standing at the door and I'm knocking. And if you open the door, I'm going to come in and sup with you. I want to have a meal with you. And so the Lord Jesus himself ties a wonderful, sumptuous, healthy meal with his presence. And I want your hearts to be warmed right now. I want you to be filled. I don't want you to be eating foods that make you feel guilty and tired and stressed and contribute to depression. I want you to start making the food choices that God himself has made to increase your well-being as well as help you to achieve a healthy weight. So these plant foods are going to provide the right mix of nutrients, not only the nutrients, but the non-nutritive substances, the phytochemicals, antioxidants, the fiber, and water. The content of these things, it's like running the best octane fuel in a plane rather than lawnmower gas.
Absolutely. Fresh, whole plant foods, you can't beat that. You can't improve on that.
No, absolutely not. And here's the thing about satiety. the word satisfaction comes from the same word as satiety or satisfaction, the fill-up value. So when we have high-fiber foods, these beautiful grains, fruits, nuts, vegetables, seeds, beans, it actually provides more fiber and more nutrition. So there is a delay of gastric emptying. So the stomach empties more slowly. The food stays longer in the small intestine, which is the major site of the digestion of these nutrients. So you're not going to have these insulin spikes to chase those high blood sugar levels. And when that happens, when you have these high sugar spikes and then it's overshot with insulin, in 2 hours, you're going to experience famine because the sugar clears too quickly because of the overactivity of the insulin. So the high fiber diet is going to maximize the absorption of these nutrients, delay the return of hunger even for the next meal. It affects that. But sure, then there's also cellular satiety. So there's volume satiety, there's nutrient satiety, and there's cellular satiety. When you have these great high fiber foods, it begins to dial down inflammation, dial down the sugar in the blood, and the insulin becomes more sensitive. The cells become more sensitive to insulin, so the glucose can get into the cells. Now you got some energy. Now you don't have to force yourself to get out and walk. You got the energy to do it, and it also has a profound effect on mood, memory, learning, behavior, creativity, well-being. Those are the good things that God wants to bring into your life by these choices. And you know what? Problems aren't going away, but I certainly don't want to create more for myself or limit my ability to solve the problems that I do face. Dr. Kelly, talk to us about green leafy vegetables and heart health.
We talked earlier about heart disease being a circulatory problem. And what we know is that green leafy vegetables and plants in general have the phytonutrients that are helpful. They are anti-inflammatory. They have antioxidants which control the stress put on our body from these oxidized foods like oxidized cholesterol, etc. They reduce the risk of ischemic stroke, which is basically a heart attack that happens in the brain. And so green leafy vegetables are a wonderful way to control the sugar, as you mentioned. You know, when it's interesting, I have patients all the time that we put on a whole food plant-based diet, and their blood sugars come down, and guess what? Their insulin also comes down. So they need less insulin to have better control of their blood sugars. And these are things that reduce the risk of heart disease and metabolic syndrome.
So these beautiful greens and fruits, they contain calcium, potassium, magnesium, vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals.
All the things that would typically our American diet is deficient in.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember when we moved to the South, I was from California, and I actually was not familiar with certain types of greens. And I remember having some guests over and fixing some greens that I was not familiar with. And I said, we are going to have BOGOs with our meal tonight. And my friend, she said, what's a BOGO? I said, well, that's what it says it is. And I served it to her. She was from the South. And she said, those are collard greens. And I said, well, the sign said BOGO. She said, that's buy one, get one. So it doesn't matter how little you know about these things. You just get started. Grab some of those greens and start enjoying them. I love to cut mine up and just steam them for just a few minutes. And by the way, putting a little bit of lemon on a green salad or on these greens actually enhances the iron absorption from the greens. So that
tastes pretty good, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's not forget to talk about the taste. And interestingly enough, these dark-colored greens and fruits contain heart-healthy polyphenols, antioxidants, and nitric oxide precursors. Why would that be a good thing?
Well, it turns out that nitric oxide is very important in dilating our vessels and controlling blood flow, letting our body put the blood where it needs to go. So we need this nitric oxide precursors to make that happen.
Yeah, but bottom line, I mean, this stuff tastes good.
Well, it does
taste
good.
It really tastes good.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Not only good for us, but it tastes good.
And you don't have to put a separate list for whatever the problem is. It's good for everything. It's good for your heart health. It's good for weight. It's good for depression. It's good for every brain-body system. So we will also want to eat heart-smart whole grains and beans. Now, grains have gotten a bad rap, but I'll tell you, these whole grains are very, very good for us. They're very rich in what is called the insoluble fibers, and the beans, they're amazing for our health. Soluble fiber comes in many different varieties. So when we think of soluble fiber, we think of beans, I think of nuts. They have soluble fiber, citrus, strawberries, flax seeds, chia. Mm-hmm. These all have different types. Pectin fiber is a type of soluble fiber. Gum fiber is found in beans. And these are all associated with lower risk for cardiovascular disease beyond levels achieved by diet low in saturated fat and cholesterol alone. So it's not just about subtracting these seven deadly dietary shifts. It's about adding these amazing medicinal, flavorful components to the diet. And when we think of soluble fiber, it's kind of a deceptive term. It sounds digestible. It isn't. But what the solubility refers to is the water-holding capacity to the grain. So when we think about the water-holding capacity, there's good, better, and best. So you have instant oats, you have regular, then you have the steel-cut oats, and then oat groats. So the less refined, the less processed the food is, then the more water-holding capacity that it has, which is going to have a better effect on blood sugar control, insulin control, and also it has a sequestering effect on cholesterol. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we know that fiber in the diet actually binds with the cholesterol that's produced in the liver and released through the gallbladder into the bloodstream. Now, we need cholesterol. It's an important part of our metabolism. But we produce more than is needed. And if we have fiber in our diet, it will actually remove the excess and reduce our cholesterol levels. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, oats is one of those few grains that actually is so effective at this that it's been recognized as a valid health claim, is that oats fiber can reduce cholesterol.
Yes, absolutely. Oats are one of the highest sources of soluble fiber. And one thing to remember is these beautiful foods don't have just this fiber or that fiber. There is this beautiful complex of the different types of fiber in all of these foods. So there is also another category of fiber groups, and that's insoluble fiber, which seem to have kind of an equal and opposite different reaction in the system, but incredibly valuable. So the insoluble fiber is associated with decreased cardiovascular risk, slower progression of cardiovascular disease in high-risk individuals. Well, how is that? It's very interesting that soluble fiber is a main substrate or food for the endothelial cells or for the cells of the GI tract. Those cells ferment insoluble fiber components with bacteria, and that has a tremendous inflammation lowering effect and affects the permeability of the gut to these wonderful nutrients. And so lowers colonic pH, it lowers the risk for certain types of cancer, especially colon cancer. So these insoluble fibers have an amazing effect on GI health, and it affects also the absorption and utilization of nutrients within the system.
Well, yes, I tell my patients that when we eat, we're not just feeding ourselves, we're feeding actually all of those microflora in our GI tract that in another talk, hopefully we can talk about that. But the point is, what we consider fiber, because we don't digest the calories in it, are actually necessary for the microorganisms that are living in us and helping us to function.
And it's absolutely stunning that the type of foods that we are eating and the breakdown by the microbiota, by the bacteria, it actually produces metabolites and byproducts that initiate the expression of neurotransmitters. So when we talk about these foods and their nutrient effect on neurochemicals that affect mood, such as serotonin, dopamine, GABA, which has to do with impulse control, these plant foods stimulate the production of these neurotransmitters in the GI tract, and so they assist in mental health. It's an incredible thing. And these heart-healthy fats, you know, FAT is not spelled BAD. Dietary fat is important for many biological functions, and it's a major component of brain and body cells.
Sure, we even have, there are essential fatty acids that we have to consume in our diet. It would be disastrous to eliminate all fat from the diet.
That's right. And our cells, all of our cells are made up of what are called bilipid layers. I guess we could compare it to ping pong balls, double layers of ping pong balls floating in a jacuzzi, and they're constantly remodeling themselves according to what we eat and stress levels. And so this has a profound effect on the permeability of these cells, how flexible they are, how electric and how conductive. So you think about when these cells become stiff from saturated fat in the diet, from the standard diet, when you think about how hard it is for the neurotransmitters to communicate their messages from cell to cell and for the hormones to do their work to control appetite, it becomes very, very important for us to consider the types of fats that we want to put into our bodies, which will have a direct relationship not only on how effectively these cells function, but also on risk for depression and even as contributors to chronic pain. Dr. Kelly, what would be some examples of some healthy fats that we want to incorporate into the diet?
Well, we know, for example, that it's important to have the omega-3 fats in our diet. And this is most of the food that we eat in the standard American diet would actually be low in omega-3 and high in the omega-6. So we need a more of a one-to-one balance. So the monounsaturated fats, such as in olive oil or in walnuts, actually many nuts, is very healthy and helpful.
Olives, avocados, yes, and the monounsaturated. And the aging brain needs more monounsaturated fat. So having that handful of nuts, enjoying those avocados, these are wonderful ways to increase the level of monounsaturated fats circulating. And when it comes to omega-3s, it's such an amazing topic, Dr. Kelly, because the first thing that people think of with an omega-3 would be fish, where you're getting preformed fatty acids. The interesting thing about this is that when these farm-fed fish, they're actually quite low in the omega-3
correct.
Fatty acids, and they're high in toxins that can really facilitate a chronic inflammatory condition. The interesting thing is that the omega-3 fats that are found in the plant kingdom, which we find in walnuts, we find it in edamame or soy, we find it in flax, chia, hemp, these seeds that we can use in our cereals or puddings or biscuits. I put it in my bread. I love it. I put it in waffles. But these natural omega-3 fatty acids actually are more efficient in the system. These fats that are preformed in meats, whether it's arachidonic acid or omega-3, they bypass metabolic controls. And in Japan, before they incorporated the Western diet, they had a real problem over there with excessive fish intake and hemorrhagic stroke because the metabolic controls that, hey, I've had enough of this, were not in place. So I am so grateful, in my view, the fatty acids that we find in the flax and in the walnuts and in the tofu, the edamame, these foods of a superior quality for metabolic control. And we can incorporate them into our diets, and they're just great. They're great tasting. So these plant compounds are all going to work together to keep the arteries flexible. And what else?
Well, we know that it improves the blood viscosity, makes it so that it is more easily transmitted through the blood vessels. We know it also helps to slow down this injury that causes the plaques, the sores we were talking about earlier. The proper fats in our diet will help not only our cell walls, as you mentioned, but it'll help the blood vessels and also helps them to be more flexible so that they are responsive and able to control, direct the blood where we want it.
That is
also, they lower the cholesterol. Interestingly enough, a study done at Loma Linda where I worked with Dr. Sabate, they did a diet experiment where we just gave walnuts to people in the study, changed nothing else in their diet, just eating a handful of walnuts every day, and we found that their cholesterol came down from just adding nuts to their
diet.
It's
beautiful. And that's 1,200 milligrams of omega-3 right there.
Yes. And we know that it also reduces inflammation and helps to quench the fires that we were talking about earlier, how it's harmful to the body.
What about
lowers
blood pressure. Wow.
And improves the circulation.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's basically the nuts. You know, we talk about, as experts, we talk about omega-3 and omega-6, and we say all these words. But when it comes down to eating, we're talking actually about eating the plant foods, the nuts and the seeds. This is where these healthy fats come from.
So when we think of a value meal, I'll ask people this in an audience. I'll say, when you think of a value meal, what do you think of? Well, we think of cheap. You're getting a lot of food cheap. But there's another definition of value,
absolutely.
And that's quality.
Absolutely.
So what we're talking about here is quality. And that leads us to the next part of this, which is creating that environment which is going to call us to a quality life. So part of creating that environment is putting things in your environment that are going to call you in this direction. So we want to de-junk the kitchen. Don't decorate with candy. You were talking about the integrity of the actual vessel. And when we have a high sugar diet, it actually causes, well, the term is it ages. It causes these advanced glycation end products that actually stiffen them. And that's directly implicated in high blood pressure and even problems with eyesight. So don't be eating every meal something sweet that's refined. Display those healthy fruits. Keep inspiring materials in view and keep your tennis shoes by the door. So what about creating that internal environment, Dr. Kelly?
Well, the internal environment, of course, we're talking about the motivation. What motivates us? Why do we live? What is our purpose in life? And I believe our purpose in life is to serve our fellow man and to glorify our God.
That is so true. And it really is what's on the inside of us that's going to lead us to shape our actions. It's been said that the man who has no inner life is a slave to his surroundings. And oh, we don't want that. So we need to take time for reflection. Take time to realize your value in the sight of God. Take time for prayer, studying God's word, his love message to you, and learning to recognize the blessings hidden in each day. Cultivating a sense of your own value and uniqueness. Anything else, Dr. Kelly?
Well, I think we should look to how we can help others. You know, it's amazing the benefit to us of doing something helpful to someone else. Random acts of kindness is actually therapeutic.
Yes. In the Bible talks about the heart as the springboard of our actions. And in Proverbs 23, verse 26, the Lord invites us. He says, "Give me your heart and let your eyes observe my ways." My instruction, he says in Deuteronomy 32, 2, my instruction shall drop as the rain. My word shall drop down as the dew. What a gentle Savior. Don't we need that? As the small rain on the tender plant and the showers on the grass. Don't be hard on yourselves, folks. God compares his counsel, instruction, and guidance to the gentle, refreshing dew on tender plants and much needed rain on dry ground. And I certainly need that. I need it every day. I know that you do too.
Yes, God invites you to reach out and receive all the good things he has for you.
Oh, and it's not just in the produce department. He wants to give you courage for your journey, wisdom for each day, help when you stumble, and joy in that healing path. Will you accept his invitation today? I know that I'm going to. I believe Dr. Kelly is too.
Absolutely.
Dr. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Been a pleasure to be with you, Vicki.